Hello and welcome to today's Daily Friend Show. I'm Herman Pretorius, standing in for our colleague Nick Lorimer, who hopefully will be joining us this week. But I am today joined by the IRR CEO, Dr. John Endres, to unpack three stories we think are not only important, but they are importantly linked. And we'll dive into those immediately. First off, we have the Business Live reporting that Prince Mashele, the political analyst, says the DA must shed white party image to win nationally. Now, that is an issue that I think we at the IRR with the Daily Friend have discussed at length. We even have polling data on it. We've seen other people poll on it. But it is an issue that seems to not go away. The idea that the DA is a white party, that it needs to shed that reputation. And seemingly one of the suggestions made is that black leadership is what the DA needs. Now, this isn't a new idea, but John, could you perhaps give us your take on where Prince Mashele is coming from with this idea? Is it merited? If not, why not? If so, why do you think it might be?
Yeah, so I think Prince Mashele is one of our better political analysts. I read his analysis with interest and with gain as well. But I do think that on this specific question, he's wrong. The reason I say that is because as South Africans, we are very much caught up in the mental framework that was produced for us by the ANC that posits that we must assess individuals by the color of their skin. And according to this notion, a white person leading a party is unsuitable for black voters. And therefore, if that party wants to appeal to black voters, it must be led by a black leader. And that seems obvious, but it's still not right, as I think the DA's own experiences showed, that its support did not markedly increase under black leaders. It did not markedly decrease under white leaders. It's not really the skin color of the leader that matters, but rather the quality of leadership that that person offers. And I don't think we should be too harsh on Mr. Mashele, because it's very hard to think outside of frameworks that are so firmly established in our political system as this framework. But I do think that over time, we will be able to move away from that. And one of the first fractures in that framework, in that very established mental model, I think was the response we saw to the announcement that Helen Zille was considering running for mayor of Johannesburg, where we saw many of the usual suspects who would have made exactly the same argument about the DA needing a black leader or having to look at representativity, saying, look at the state of Johannesburg. Actually, at this stage, we don't care anymore. We just want somebody competent, whatever their skin color is, whatever their background is, to sort out the mess. And that applies at a national level as well. You know, we've got a big mess in South Africa in many areas, the economy, service delivery, governance, corruption, crime, et cetera, things we talk about quite a lot on the show. We want to fix the mess. And I don't think that most South Africans care about the skin color of the person fixing the mess. They want it sorted. Back over to you, Hammond.
To add to that, which I think you're right, and I do have a lot of time for Prince Mashele, even though in his one book he called me Helen Ziller's dog or terrier or something, which I thought was unfair. He never asked the dog his opinion, but let me not yap on about that. What I think is interesting is that if we look at our polling that we published earlier this year, just at the time of the debate in Parliament over raising VAT, what we saw, what we captured in the moment of that survey being in the field, was South African politics focused on something out of the ordinary, something that had real cut through, that didn't usually electrify the political discussions around the country, and that was tax policy. Now, tax policy is never sexy, but when it comes to the bottom line, something like VAT, a tax that every single person in this country is exposed to and can feel with every transaction that they engage with their hard-earned cash, that debate cut through. And we saw this incredible contrast of the DA opposing the VAT increase, MK opposing the VAT increase, the EFF opposing the VAT increase, and on the other side supporting the VAT increase, we had the ANC, the IFP, and the Patriotic Alliance. The VAT opposing parties, whether they had black leaders or not, saw their vote share climb, and the parties that supported raising VAT, whether they had black leaders or not, saw their vote share dip. Now we're probably a few months past that specific moment. And as we wrote at the time, that wasn't necessarily a representative, new, sustainable, feasible, paradigm. But what it did show was that if the DA wanted to see its support amongst especially black South Africans go from its usual 4 or 5% to double digits, where we had them at 18%, and where I think subsequent polling had them still in the double digits, it wasn't a shift of leadership, it wasn't a shift of identity, it was just finding an issue that the public care about strongly and being on the right side of it, showing that, South Africans, for all that is said and written about us, are a moderate, pragmatic bunch of people that genuinely want South Africa to be an operational, welcoming, growing country. And I think that might be a truth so hard to see for people in the political sphere, even in our own sort of circles of political commentary, that it is useful for the IRR's data to every now and again just sort of be the thing that removes the covers over your eyes to let you see the fact that South Africans care about jobs, the debate around VAT show, what has cut through, and we can really start moving on from this, oh, but only if there was a black leader, or if only the Plascon card and the ballot form sort of were interchangeable, elections would be so great and South Africa would be wonderful. So there are deeper things at play here, and that does bring us onto our second story about what actually matters. Now, the ANC, to the extent that it has pursued pro-growth reforms, has tried over the last few years, especially during the presidency of Ramaphosa, to be so in favor of and championing of the reforms called Operation Vulindlela, which covers a whole range of changes and suggestions across various areas of policy. And Operation Vulindlela is now entering its second phase. Could you tell us a bit, John, about phase one of this Operation Vulindlela, phase two, and perhaps why South Africans should think it's worthwhile, or whether they should be cautious about this being fundamental pro-growth economic reform?
Yeah, so I think the important thing that you need to know as a South African about Operation Vulindlela is that it's very much focused on infrastructure. So it's focused on improving the performance of our electricity system, of our rail, our road, our communications, our water as well. And that is quite important, of course, because we see in South Africa that many areas of infrastructure are crumbling or collapsing and also limiting the ability of our economy to grow. And so it is understandable, and I think also to be welcomed, that this is being addressed in the form of Operation Vulindlela in its first phase and its second phase. But what I want to caution South Africans against is to think that this will be enough to produce the high growth rates that the country needs to get unemployment down, to get incomes rising. So our anticipation is that the infrastructure reforms, if they are well carried out, might double our growth rate. And our growth rate is currently 0.6% or thereabouts, so we might get to 1.2%. And you could be super ambitious and say, they're going to shoot the lights out with these infrastructure reforms, and we'll get to double that. That will be 2.4%, which will be very nice compared to where we are now, but it's not enough. We need to be at 5, 6, 7% growth, right up there with the top emerging markets in the world, if we want to get unemployment down sustainably. If we want to bring people into the job market, earning a living, increasing their incomes, and providing better lives for themselves and their families. And to achieve that takes more than just infrastructure reform. To achieve that takes policy reform, number one. And number two, it takes addressing the crime and corruption problem so that investors are not scared to bring their money into South Africa and put it into fixed investment, which is what we need. What you can also read into the Operation Vulindlela announcements is that it is very easy for a politician to be to respond to requests to spend money, which is what infrastructure repairs are. If you want to fix infrastructure or expand it, you've got to spend vast amounts of money, billions and billions and billions of rands. And no politician is going to say no to that. So Operation Vulindlela are the reforms that are really politically easy to do for the government. It's great to claim credit for it, but it's not talking about the more difficult, politically challenging reforms that need to happen to lift the economic growth rate in South Africa. And so that is the key takeaway on Operation Vulindlela. It's good for what it is, but it's not enough. A lot more needs to happen to get growth to where it has to be.
And what's interesting to me is that we've got very, very strong historic data on what voters and South Africans want. And we don't have to here talk about IRR polling. We can contrast two elections and the ANC's performance in those elections. We can look at the 2024 election, where they plummeted below 50%, or we could look at the 2004 election, where they shot up to 70% of the vote. And the context of these elections are very important. You know, the second election did take place with Operation Vulindlela having been rolled out, operational, and it might have, you know, delivered a few goodies, but it didn't cut through to the extent that the ordinary South African could actually go, what the government did for my quality of life is something I want to see more of. That's why I'm going to reward them with my vote. That's very different from what happened in 2004. Service delivery on a good momentum, whether it's housing, education, electricity, water, unemployment inching downwards towards the mid-low 20s, fiscal discipline of actually not spending more than you can earn and looking at liberalizing your markets as a source of growth rather than, as you say, you know, infrastructure spending, which is necessary, particularly where it's been sort of underfunded or undermanaged. But at the end of the day, what drove the ANC to win 7 out of every 10 votes wasn't an Operation Vulindlela. It was just an operating economy, a growing economy. And I think sometimes that's a truth so obvious that you need to be a politician or an economist or an academic not to see it. That the polling shows jobs rank so highly, how jobs are created, there's such broad consensus of it that even President Ramaphosa agrees that these jobs come from the private sector. To then combine all of these facts and come to the conclusion that, oh, yes, what we need is perhaps tinkering on the edges rather than fundamentally getting to a pro-growth mindset. I sometimes feel that that's a truth so obvious that it is ignored.
Yeah, there's two more points I want to add there, Herman. The one is that our public spending often is very inefficient. So we're talking about spending billions and billions and billions of rands fixing our infrastructure, but we've got a preferential procurement system that sort of purposefully distorts public procurement away from value for money and introduces elements that create confusion and that make public spending very inefficient. So our bang for buck on this infrastructure spending is probably not going to be very good, even though we need to do it. So that's one drawback. And the second one is in the piece that we read, I think it was on News 24, an interesting sort of positioning in the headline. It says Ramaphosa rebukes privatization critics. So in other words, where does his focus lie? What is he worried about? He's worried about people saying, well, you're letting the private sector into these infrastructure projects, and that is very bad. Whereas, of course, that's exactly what's needed. You know, that's the private sector that is able to achieve results in South Africa, much different to the public sector.
And it is a point that is really echoed that time and time again, where the South African state has failed, we have seen the private sector become incredibly resilient and innovative, whether it is in terms of the collapse of policing, we've got private security, whether it is the collapse of Eskom, we've got residential solar generation. But the real danger with that is, if you are in a country with such vast socioeconomic inequalities, those innovations can often only go where there's consumer power to drive them and to benefit from them. And if you're in a country with poverty, these solutions can innovate and they can compete downwards for costs to be really efficient. But it's almost as if you've got a private sector desperately trying to lift up South Africa, and you've got a state that is trying almost everything it can to shirk that upward momentum. And this is the same president in the same parliament who in August 2019 said he believes, like the EFF, that the state should be at the heart of the South African economy. It's not about Operation Vulindlela or Shmulindlela. It is really about getting the basics right, and that is a pro-growth attitude. And then perhaps that's a good link to our third story, that having that pro-growth attitude, going back to what works in terms of fiscal prudence, sensible regulation, light touch regulation, the state not being so involved in calling the shots, because if people are given a choice, our polling shows a majority of people want stuff like private healthcare. But there's a link here to the macroeconomic or even the global economic perspective, where South Africa has come to have a surprising presence, especially on the other side of the Atlantic. And you draw our attention to this piece in the Wall Street Journal with a headline, "While Washington acts against Pretoria's foreign alignments, financial markets fail to spot the reckoning ahead." Tie that into this growth argument for us.
Yeah, so I thought this was an interesting editorial because the main point it makes is that we can see the shifting attitudes in Washington towards South Africa, and we can see the growing confrontation and I guess antagonism between the two governments. But the piece observes that the financial markets haven't really caught on to that yet. So they're still pricing South Africa as a sort of kind of emerging market, similar to other emerging markets, with no significantly different risks to other emerging markets. The piece points out that that is a misassessment. That's like a misreading of the situation, and it suggests that the next step or the next phase in the escalation of the relationship is going to be some form of sanctions against individuals in South Africa or possibly organizations in South Africa. If that happens, if it comes to pass, it will cause a rapid repricing of South Africa's risk. And international investors will suddenly feel as if, that they'd had their blinders removed from their eyes. And they'll say, oh, like, we were looking at South Africa like this Mandela, Rainbow Nation, reconciliation, emerging market story. That's not what it is. It's like a kleptocratic regime, a mafia state in cahoots with Iran, China, and, the sort of the worst human rights offenders in the world. And that's where we've been putting our money. That's terrible. Let's take our money out quickly. What will happen is that, interest rates will rise, bond yields will rise. It'll become much harder for the South African state to borrow money. And we've already got a debt problem right now. That will become even harder. The economy will grow less. We'll lose more jobs. So the consequences are really, really serious. And the fact that that is not being spotted at the moment is concerning. It is also concerning, I think, for our local business community, which I think is maybe also a little bit complacent about the risks that lie ahead, and which would do well, I think, to exert a bit more pressure on our government and to say, we are very concerned about what may be coming in the next 6 months to a year. And we actually do need to show some movement on the things that Washington is asking for, else we're in for a world of pain.
And I must say, I think one can add two things there, is that the message from this isn't, oh, South Africa's going to hell in a handbasket, give up, pull out. It's that don't miss the opportunity to apply the pressure for things to change for the better. Now, we've got a unique moment, not because of the GNU and whatever sentiment one might buy into that, but because the fact that, objectively speaking, power has never been so decentralized politically. that there's a weakening ANC. So for 30 years, if you wanted a business to have favorable impact on policies, on the framework of regulations, you could just build a very close relationship with the ANC and have that sort of access. But now we've got 10 parties around the cabinet table. So firstly, I would advise businesses to understand that the ANC is no longer the only game in town. There's genuinely a competition now for who could lead the next multi-party government. And then I think the second point that is so important is we shouldn't see the American sentiment as just a result of the Trump factor. If we remember correctly, it was during the Biden administration that the escalation of tension between South Africa and the US really started. It was under Ambassador Brigidi, a Democratic appointee, that the Lady R disaster happened, that the consideration of South Africans' position in AGOA being reviewed pushed from bipartisan voices in Congress. Business and Pretoria shouldn't delude themselves to think, oh, let's just survive three more years or four more years of Donald Trump, and then perhaps we'll get a Democrat president and we'll go back to the way things were. This is a much deeper problem that those stakeholders in government or in business cannot be blind to. The reality is that if you're going to use the moment, you have to understand the moment. And if there's a lagging understanding, there's going to be a lagging utilization. Perhaps, John, last word to you. What next from here with these arguments of where focus should lie and what shouldn't be ignored?
Well, I think really the key point is to always update your understanding of your environment, which is what we try to do with the Daily Friend Show and, you know, through the IRR to have a thorough understanding of how things really are rather than how they appear. And based on that, you can make good decisions. And I think you're quite right in pointing out the unique nature of the moment that South Africa finds itself in right now, which is that we are in a bit of a state of flux. You know, political balances of power are being recalibrated all over the place. Mental models are being updated, and that is a huge opportunity. So from the IRR side, we've got the Blueprint for Growth papers that describe how to get to high growth rates and why to get to high growth rates. We've got the What SA Can Be campaign that explains what South Africa could be if we make the right decisions now, what it can be in 10 years, 15 years from now. We've got the bills, concept bills that describe what sort of laws to change to get to higher growth. So the answers are all available. The solutions are all ready to hand. They just need to be grabbed and used. And then I think, you know, South Africa's got a good opportunity.
Well, I can't end it better than that. On that hopeful, yet sort of a slightly ominous note, I thank you for being with us today. I will see you again tomorrow where we dip into the state of South Africa. Thank you very much for your time. We'll see you again.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.